Thank you.
Good morning. Scott Bach, Executive Director of the Association of New Jersey Rifle and Pistol Clubs and a member of the NRA Board of Directors. First, I just want to thank Alan Gottlieb and Julianne and SAF for the work they do, for standing up for New Jersey and places like New Jersey, for making a difference, for filling a void in the legal community. So thank you all so much for what you've been doing. You know, a state can be an example or a warning. And in the case of New Jersey, it's a warning. I'm sorry to say that. And you got to wonder, how does that happen? You know, 50 years ago, gun owners, by and large, were asleep at the switch. Nobody was expecting what came. And we're in a situation in the Garden State today that's very hard for some people to imagine. Now, I know we've got Illinois, Massachusetts here, but here's how New Jersey gun law works. New Jersey gun law 101. New Jersey gun law starts by banning everything there is to do with firearms. Everything. Blanket ban on ownership, use, possession, transportation, transfer. Everything there is to do with a firearm is, as a default matter in the Garden State, is banned, with limited, teeny, tiny exceptions. Now, that is backwards. Imagine if you did that with free speech for a second. Okay? All free speech is banned except where the government allows it. That is what we live under every day in New Jersey, and you can probably imagine that the exceptions are not exactly well crafted. Okay, those exceptions are stingy, they're ill-conceived, and they turn law-abiding citizens into criminals every single day. Well, how can that happen, you ask? Well, just for example, in New Jersey, you're only allowed to possess a firearm in certain authorized points and going directly to or from those authorized points. The moment you deviate in your transportation, you're unlawfully in possession of a firearm, which in the case of handguns in New Jersey was bumped up to second-degree crime, which means up to 10 years in jail. Now, I know the crowd I'm talking to. Most often when I talk about this, I say to people, well, you know, you're probably asking yourself, well, that's what the law says, but that could never happen, right? That could never really happen. Well, I know you've all heard of Brian Aitken, and I certainly know you've all heard of Shaneen Allen, okay, who, by the way, you all heard the news about Shaneen, who was supposed to be here but could not be. But we actually had a breath of fresh air out of New Jersey for the first time in a very long time, where the executive branch is showing signs of sanity. Actually, the state attorney general just issued a guidance to everybody that's going to affect not just Shaneen Allen, but hundreds of people in a similar posture with cases pending right now who are facing up to 10 years for doing nothing wrong. So you got to wonder why in the last couple of years, with all these gun laws the way they are, what are the legislators in the Garden State thinking when they introduce hundreds of gun bills over the last 2 years? What are they thinking? And I'll tell you exactly what they're thinking. They are thinking, we're not going to stop till we take them all away, because that's really what this is about. I mean, look, I've been doing this for close to 15 years. And when I first started, part of me, the naive part of me, thought, well, maybe these people have just never heard the truth. They've just never heard the argument before. Well, let me tell you something. Their agenda was laid bare, and particularly in the Garden State. How many of you heard of our confiscate event that happened last year? Okay, a few of you. So after Newtown, okay, the legislature started pushing 85 gun bills, and they rammed those through committee. And after one particularly difficult committee hearing, now the state has an official audio recording of every committee hearing, and three female state senators were talking among themselves after the hearing. Only problem is the official state recording was still running. It was a hot mic. And they talked among themselves about how the legislation they had just passed wasn't strong enough, that we needed a bill that would, quote, confiscate. They're not going to stop until they have everything. That is their goal. And that's the thing that comes out again and again and again. It's not about safety. I mean, to be perfectly honest, there's only one gun law that's needed, and that is, if you commit a violent crime with a firearm, we lock you up and throw away the key. When you look at every single one, every single one of these proposals that come out, whether it's 50 caliber ban, the magazine capacity ban that we just defeated in New Jersey, permitting schemes, one gun a month, smart guns, which started in New Jersey, unfortunately, all of them have at their common core, when you examine them under the light of logic and scrutiny and common sense, they make no sense unless their goal is to find a way to ban and make firearms ownership harder and harder and harder. So look, just talking about what we've just been through, a lot of people have been asking, well, you know, what's up with those vetoes the last 2 years? Okay, because after Newtown, we've heard a little bit about that. It's personal now with the folks on the other side. Okay, largely the gun ban movement has failed nationally over the last 20 years. But what I can tell you is after Newtown, this was their moment and they seized on it. Aha. Okay, 2 minutes. Look, the bottom line is it is personal. After Newtown, I got death threats because of my NRA board affiliation. And they're out to destroy our rights. They're going for broke. They're doing everything they possibly can do. And people have said, well, you know, you just got those vetoes because Governor Christie wants to run for president. We don't know yet whether he does. I personally think he does, but we don't know that for a fact. But for the 10 years before he was governor, New Jersey gun owners still found a way to defeat almost every bill that came up despite overwhelming odds in the legislature. And as my time winds up, the message I want to leave you with is, how did we do that? Because honestly, the State House has been aligned against us for a very, very long time. And what it starts with a decision. It starts with one person saying, I am going to plant my feet. I am going to find a way. I don't care what the odds are. We will use intelligence, we will use strength, we will use force of will if that's all we have, but we will find a way to stand and fight no matter what the odds. And New Jersey gun owners have done that again and again and again. This past year, people kept asking us, why do you keep telling us to pound on these legislators? We know the committee is going to pass it. And the answer is because we need to, because when we go to Governor Christie, we want to say, do you want to be the only Republican in the state to vote for a magazine ban? And that's exactly what we did. My time's running out. Remember, it starts with one person. It starts with you. It's not up to somebody else. It's up to each and every one of us to make that difference. Thank you very much.
Sean?
Good morning. I'm Sean Curran. I'm the executive director of Florida Carry. You know, many of you have heard Florida called the Gunshine State, and it's not completely undeserved for some reasons. You know, we are considered to be a very gun-friendly state. It doesn't mean that we're not without our problems, and some of them are actually quite shocking when you hear about a state like ours where everyone expects that. We're going to have more pro-gun legislators, where we have the largest concealed carry licensing program in the world. We had some bills last year. One of our biggest wins was the bill that allows for the defensive display of a firearm. All this bill said was, if you're in a situation where your life is in danger, you're at danger of great bodily harm or death, that instead of having to pull the trigger, having to go all the way to that last extreme use of force, that you can merely display a firearm in order to defuse the situation and not be prosecuted for it. It's a bill that shouldn't have been necessary. Unfortunately, we had prosecutors who were saying, because you didn't pull the trigger, it showed that you weren't in full fear of death. So we're prosecuting you for aggravated assault and giving you a mandatory minimum sentence of 20 years in jail. We ended that. Now, if it is a case of imperfect self-defense, where things aren't all the way there, the judge can depart the mandatory minimum sentence and do justice in these cases. And we do explicitly now allow for the defensive display of a firearm where you can use force. So that was a huge win for us. And a lot of that was about really reining in these prosecutors who had really run amok. It was the prosecutors in Florida that created, at least under Florida law, Florida's duty to retreat. There was never any statute that said that you had a duty to retreat prior to stand your ground. It was wholly a creation of the courts and prosecutors' argument for it. So this was another defensive move that we had to make in order to defend your right to defend yourself, which is really, you know, at the core of what we do with the Second Amendment. We had another bill last year that didn't go so well. So it's the emergency evacuation bill. What this said was, if you come under a mandatory evacuation, which, as you can imagine, with the hurricanes and tornadoes and flooding and things that happen in Florida, we often get emergency situations handed down. The bill was going to allow you to evacuate with your guns, because currently, under a locally declared emergency in the state of Florida, the second that emergency gets filed, there is a blanket ban on the possession of firearms outside the home. It doesn't matter if you have a concealed carry license. Doesn't matter if it's lawfully in your car, if it's outside your home, under that local ban, you're a prohibited person. So we went after that. There's a case out of North Carolina that said that that's an unconstitutional ban. We went to the legislature and tried to change it. And the Florida Sheriff's Association fought us tooth and nail. They sent their lobbyist, who stood in front of committee, and said that, yes, you have a right to own a gun, but carrying one is a privilege. Then we had senior members of our Republican-controlled legislature, and that backed the Sheriff's Association and killed that bill because it was too much for them that someone may be armed at a time where they may need it most. So this came down at the very end, on the House floor, after passing all the committees in both chambers, or in the Senate floor, rather, and it became a referendum on a fight between two politicians, both vying for the Senate presidency vote that's coming up this year. And that was Jack Latvala and Joe Negron. Joe Negron is an absolute supporter of your Second Amendment rights. Jack Latvala is not. He fought against this bill. He used the Second Amendment as a test vote to see who was going to be loyal to him in the fight for Senate presidency. So we have a problem. He beat that bill, and it showed that he's viable as a Senate president candidate. So if we don't convince the legislators in Florida that backing Jack Latvala and backing our unconstitutional sheriffs with the Florida Sheriff's Association, is going to be uncomfortable for them because they're going to be alienating their core voters, their gun owners in their districts. We're in for a lot of hurt for the next few years, under that Senate presidency. We have a few more good points going on right now. We have a rule change that's going through our Department of Fish and Wildlife to allow for the use of suppressors while hunting. So hearing protection will no longer be illegal when you're going to take a deer. And we're expecting some more bills in this coming session to deal with NFA items and suppressors. So that's some positive steps that are being made there. Right now we also have an issue with, we're obviously all concerned with the safety of our children in schools. We have a school district in Florida that took a little over $1 million and hired 31 armed security guards so that they could put a good guy with a gun in every school in their district. The sheriff of that county got very upset that instead of using his deputies, they hired 31 armed, trained, licensed security guards, all of which are either former military or former law enforcement. He instead offered 5 deputies for the same money that would just patrol all the schools. He's now threatened to arrest any of the armed security guards if they possess a firearm on campus, on any of the K-12 campuses. they absolutely have a right. The school districts absolutely have a right to protect their schools. The law is clear that they can authorize armed guards, but that's not stopping the sheriff, and it's not because he wants to protect anyone. It's because he's worried about his budget.
What county is that?
This is Eric Hills, Manatee County.
What's his name?
What's his phone number? Yeah, well, I don't have it off the top of my head. I'm gonna put it on our website, floridacarry.org. I'll have that up there in a few hours.
Just keep talking.
So right now, beyond, of course, having to unfortunately fight with our sheriffs and fight with some of the anti-gun legislators that we have, unfortunately, who are in way too much power, we're also having to deal with some glitches that have been created by the courts. Things like the duty to retreat that was created by the courts. We have now issues where you can lawfully have a gun in, say, your apartment or condominium. You can lawfully have a gun in your car. However, you can't move your gun between your car and your condominium, either openly or concealed. If you do it concealed, you're a felon. If you do it openly, it's a misdemeanor. We have issues with, and yes, they're prosecuting things like this. We have issues where there are many things that you can do lawfully that they've explained are all affirmative defenses and not a right in the state of Florida. So even in a state like ours, which you've all heard of as a gunshine state, that issues the most concealed carry licenses of any, the fight is nowhere near being quiet. And we need your support, and we need you guys in your home states doing all you can. Thank you. Yes, I apologize. Yes, that is Sheriff Stubbe. Interestingly enough, his son is a Florida legislator who sponsored a bill to allow for armed teachers. And during the committee hearing about that bill, he said, "I hope I'm going to be welcome home for Thanksgiving dinner."
And now we'll hear from Tony, who's with CRPA, but he has to limit himself to the two or three most egregious things in California.
Good luck with that.
Thank you, Julianne. How's that? Everybody hear me? Okay. Good morning. And as Julianne said, my name is Tony Montanarella. I'm with the California Rifle and Pistol Association, and greetings from the People's Republic of California. Before I go on, I'm going to hit some highlights because I know I don't have a bunch of time, but I'm going to start with kind of explaining to you the political landscape in California, because it is very unique and unlike any place else in the country. First of all, the Democratic Party controls everything. They control absolutely everything. And I'm not talking about just typical garden variety Democrats. I'm talking Democrats who are basically socialists. There's a Democratic legislature out of the Bay Area up in San Francisco who thinks that not even police officers should be armed with guns. That's how bad it is. So they control absolutely everything. The good part about that is that they can't blame anything on the Republicans, because Republicans in California are pretty much in name only. The legislature currently is probably the most corrupt state legislature in the country. Currently, there's probably about 20% of the Democratic Party that are in power in California who are either under investigation, indicted, or arrested. And I'm going to give you just a quick example. There's one very popular state senator by the name of Leland Yee. Out of the Bay Area, apparently some of you know about his case. And Senator Yee, we've been battling him for the entire time he's been in the legislature, is vehemently anti-gun. And he was recently arrested probably a couple months back for, of all things, one of his charges was gun running. And he associated himself with a very notorious Asian gang leader from the Bay Area by the name of Shrimp Boy. Now, we can only speculate as to why his name was Shrimp Boy, but Nonetheless, these are the types of things that are very common amongst the Democratic Party in the state of California, which if you're a gun owner is actually a good thing because they're busy worrying about themselves and not really worrying about us. But they still find the time to mess with us. The FBI is the FBI office in San Francisco is the only one in the country that has a full-time task force devoted only to state corruption. So it's an interesting landscape. Governor Brown, believe it or not, is I would describe him as moderately pro-gun. He's actually vetoed some bills that would have hurt us a great deal in California. And he may be extremely liberal on the social issues, but on the gun issue, he's actually surprised us for the better. So that's very good. His Republican challenger for the November election is a man by the name of Neil Kashkari, who is a Republican. And last poll I checked, he was down by about 22 points. So it looks like we're probably going to be stuck with Governor Brown for another four-year term. Let me go through some of the challenges that we have in California, and Julianne, I will stick with only a few. One of the worst pieces of legislation that we have that we're trying to deal with right now, and it's on the governor's desk as we speak. Hopefully he'll veto it. Is Assembly Bill Number 1014. This is by Assembly Member Skinner from the Bay Area. This is the so-called restraining order bill. And what this, when it first came out, this was the result of an incident up in Santa Barbara at the University of California, Santa Barbara. I'm sure everybody heard of it, where a very deranged young man went on a shooting spree, quote unquote, and shot some people. What they failed to say is that his first three victims, his roommates, were actually stabbed. But they seem to gloss that over and just concentrate on the fact that he was armed. Anyway, this bill was a result of that. And it was the restraining order bill. And basically, when it first came out, it said that anybody could go to a judge and ask for a restraining order against somebody who had guns or who was suspected of having guns. Now, while this was making its way to the legislature, I can assure you that if you were married and a gun owner, you were the most servile, most obedient husband in the country during this time. You did not want to do anything to upset your spouse. The version that's now, we were able to kind of water it down a little bit. The version that is on the governor's desk now says that you have to be a law enforcement officer to get a quote unquote gun owner restraining order. It's just as bad as far as we're concerned. There's no quarter on this. We're not giving up the fight. Our argument to the governor's office is doesn't matter. It's still very, very dangerous. And there's already laws in place that deal with things that are very similar. You heard about it earlier, the lead ban. This trend started in California. It started with Assembly Bill 711. It's an extremely, extremely dangerous bill. This is absolutely the anti-gunner's new tactic, is to concentrate on lead ban and ammunition and stuff like that. And understand that California is a test bed. Pretty much any piece of anti-gun legislation that they want to spread across the country is going to have its test bed in California, because if you're anti-gun, you have a very, very friendly atmosphere in California, unfortunately. Mayors Against Illegal Guns, Mayor Bloomberg's group is extremely active in California. We're constantly battling local initiatives, local ordinances, and that are a result of that game plan. Some of the victories that we've had, because we actually had some victories. In the CCW arena, Peruta versus San Diego County, this was a huge, huge win for us. And this basically challenged the good cause requirement for obtaining a CCW in San Diego County. That has now spread throughout the state of California. And this came out of the Ninth Circuit, the most liberal, the most anti-gun court there is in the country. And yet this decision, very good for us, came out of the Ninth Circuit. So every once in a while, they surprise you. We like to call it the Ninth Circuit crapshoot, because that's exactly what it is. You have no idea what's going to come out of that. As you've heard from some of our cohorts across the country, Sandy Hook was a watershed event for us as well. You had every possible anti-gun measure that you could think of was thrown. We had pretty close to 80 bills that were anti-gun that we were dealing with. And We call it the Second Amendment Lawyers Employment Act, because we would have been tied up in court for years on all of this. It was that egregious. Very, very little actually got through. And what did get through, some of it was actually vetoed by Governor Brown, and some of the other stuff was to the point where we had watered it down to the point where it was almost insignificant, which is a huge win for us, and we're very happy about it. Another thing that we're doing is we're changing the narrative. In other words, you've heard that we have to go on the offense and do what we can to change the narrative. We don't get involved in the social issues. In other words, we really don't care. In other states, some of those things do come into play. For us, if you're pro-Second Amendment and you're a gun owner, we're on board with you. We don't care. We don't care about gay marriage. We don't care about any of that kind of stuff. If you're a gun owner, there's an organization in the Bay Area called the Pink Pistols who are very pro-gun. And they're an awesome, awesome group. And we really don't care about that kind of stuff. If you're gay and you want to get married, you should have the right to be miserable like the rest of us. Have at it. Don't care about that. As long as you're positive on guns. So understand that this is a culture war. We are now at the point where all of us across the country are in a culture war. Not only is it a fight for our gun rights, but it's also changing the narrative and convincing people that, hey, we're not the bad guys. We are not the problems. As a matter of fact, we're part of the solution. And that's kind of what we do to change the narrative. We're huge on training, because one of the things that we saw is a trend. In other words, the legislature, a lot of the bills we're dealing with, we want more training, we want more this, we want more that. We said, you know what? You want training? We kind of actually agree with you, but we're going to do it on our terms. We're going to introduce it on our terms. And that's exactly what we started doing. We started going on the offensive and changing the narrative so that every time they came up with an excuse, we said, hey, we're already doing that. And we, you know what? All of our people are responsible. They're good people of good moral character, whatever they wanted to hear. But we did it on our terms. And it kind of deflated the argument, and it ended up being extremely effective for us. You've also heard time and time again, the county sheriffs are key. That is huge in California, because believe it or not, the reason California is as screwed up as it is because the Democrats pretty much control San Francisco, the Bay Area, and Los Angeles and Los Angeles Basin, which are the population centers, and that's where all the voters are. But all the rural sheriffs and the sheriffs in the outlying countries, counties, are actually very, very pro-gun, and they've helped us on a lot of things. They've written letters in support of or against certain pieces of legislation, and they've been awesome for us. So, am I almost done? Okay, one more real quick thing. I see Rhonda Yazell is in the audience here, and Rhonda, I want you to know that what you did here in Illinois is helping us in California, so you're making a difference everywhere. So, on the behalf of Californians, thank you. And Alan and Julianne, thank you so much for having us. Thank you for this awesome conference, and I hope everybody enjoys the rest of the weekend. Thank you very much. If you have any questions, let me know afterwards.
Andrew?
I am Andrew Rothman. I'm the president of the Gun Owners Civil Rights Alliance. I'm the new kid on the block. That happened because my civil rights mentor, Professor Joseph E. Olson, carried the water for 25 years. And then when I wasn't looking, he dumped the bag on my doorstep and ran away. And so if I can make it through 2.5 years, I'm going to call that a victory. But couldn't have done it without everybody that came before, especially Professor Olson, who couldn't make it today because of airplanes and stuff. To understand what's going on in Minnesota in 2014, you have to understand what happened in 2013. If you were here, if you were in Houston last year, you heard me talking about this. The anti-gunners thought they had us. We had a Democrat majority in the House, a Democrat majority in the Senate, and a Democrat governor who's never been a friend of gun rights. And we had the Sandy Hook murders take place 25 days before a 2013 session started. They thought they had us. They had magazine bans, ammunition bans. They had assault weapon bans. They had registration for body armor, anything you could think of. They threw it up against the wall. President Obama came to Minnesota to kick off his gun control push throughout the nation because he figured this is a pretty good place to start. We shocked them. We showed up by the hundreds. We showed up by the thousands. We filled the committee rooms. We filled up the overflow rooms. We filled up the overflow rooms. We put 1,200 people on the front steps of the Capitol on a freezing day in January. And thanks to the example that we learned here of the IGOL, the Illinois Gun Owners Lobby Day, we all wore shirts that were the same color, and there was no denying that those conference rooms were not filled up with opponents of gun rights. They were filled with supporters of gun rights. And so the Gun Rights Policy Conference was instrumental in helping us to win in 2013. So in 2014, Michael Bloomberg's organization hired 4 professional lobbyists in Minnesota to push for more gun control, and they casually swept aside our longtime, well-known, and largely incompetent foes at the legislature and replaced them with professionals. They focused on domestic violence, because who wants to defend a wife beater, right? And so they said, let's hitch our horses to domestic violence, and we'll start the gun control that way. But they didn't want to just mirror the federal law. It's already federal law. If you're convicted of domestic violence, if you have a final order for protection, you can't possess guns. And I'm not even going to argue with that. But what they proposed, the language that came straight from New York City, said if you're merely accused of domestic violence, we're going to take away your guns. We're going to make you pay to store them. We're going to make you get a court order to get them back. It was awful, but something wonderful happened. The Democrat majority looked at the election coming up in 10 months, and they remembered all those maroon shirts, and they told the gun controllers, we're not touching this bill until the gun guys say it's all right. That made the Bloomberg lobbyists mad. So we made them work pretty hard. And, you know, I almost felt bad for them until I realized they're making $350 an hour and I'm a volunteer. Then I didn't feel so bad about making them work for it. We fixed their bill. We made the Minnesota law actually a benefit to defendants in Minnesota. We got it to respect due process. We got it so there didn't have to be a charge. We got it so that an accused person would actually have to go in front of a judge and there would have to be a finding of fact that they were a danger. And then they could get someone else to store the guns for them. They could send them over to their brother's house or their uncle's house or their friend's house. And that any records of that would be hidden from the police and would be sealed by the court. We provided that due process. And in the end, we told our friends in the legislature, if you want to support that bill, we're going to support you. If you want to oppose that bill, we're going to support you. It's completely your choice. The bill passed, and the Bloomberg folks called it a victory. Our largely incompetent state competition said, look what we did. And we said, who are you? Here's what really happened. You guys can keep a secret, right? I mean, there's only us here, right? The provisions of the bill that mirrored the federal law on domestic violence actually brought Minnesota for the first time into full compliance with NICS, which means that our carry permits are now going to be our purchase permits as well, and we're not going to have to do a NICS check at the gun store. We still face threats. We have Michael Bloomberg. I don't know if you've heard of our U.S. Senator Stuart Smalley, I think. No, Al Franken. Al Franken votes with President Obama 97% of the time, and he's never met a gun control bill that he wouldn't co-sponsor. The Bloomberg folks just spent $140,000 to send multiple mailings to every house in the state, well, most houses in the state, with pictures of the Sandy Hook children and parents on it. saying, we've got to do something. We've got to do something. Al Franken is going to do sensible gun control. It's hard to fight that kind of money, and our lackluster opponent to Al Franken is going to have a tough road in front of him. We face other threats in Minnesota. We have frauds among us. On the state level, we have a group called Minnesota Gun Rights, which is a cookie-cutter clone of the National Association for Gun Rights, Dudley Brown's organization. These people, and, you know, I want to be really open and understanding, these people are snakes. And they are emailing, you know, from Colorado and saying, oh my gosh, the sky is falling and you should send us some money because we're looking out for you and the sky is falling. These are the folks who are turning on our friends in the legislature. These are the folks who are seeing threats where none exist, who are pressuring people to bow and scrape to their extremist ideology and then turn on them and burn them. This group called Minnesota Gun Rights is in Des Moines. Okay, and those of you who aren't from flyover country, Des Moines is actually in Iowa, which isn't exactly where Minnesota is. The chairman of Minnesota Gun Rights is currently under investigation by the FEC for all sorts of election improprieties during the last presidential election. But these guys are scaring us. They're scaring our gun owners in Minnesota. They are siphoning money away. They are taking credit for the work that real gun owners, civil rights groups do. And we've got to stop them. I got to say one more thing, I promise. Here's the key. Always engage. Always engage with everybody. Take every speaking opportunity. Go and talk to every group. Earlier this year, we went to the Republican State Convention. Earlier this year, we also went to the Democratic State Convention. The Republicans let us in for $50. The Democrats wanted $300. But we went there and we set up our table and we had our message. We had buttons in our colors and they said pro-gun liberal. And they had the union label on them because it was the Democrat convention. We talk to everyone. We don't stick our nose in the air. We don't brand people as enemies. This week we talked to the Secretary of State of Minnesota. She's a Democrat. She's a great shot. She's a competitive trap shooter. She's got a carry permit. She doesn't care who knows it. And she will be governor in Minnesota in 4 or 8 years. I'm sorry, what did I say? That was the Attorney General. What did I say? Secretary of State. No, the Attorney General. Sorry. She doesn't care who knows it. We talk to everybody. Like Tony said, and this is really important, if you get up and you're talking gun rights and you talk about the gays, if you talk about Jesus, if you talk about Common Core, if you talk about the Middle East or immigration, you're losing people. Maybe you live in a state where you can afford to lose people. We can't. We want all the gun owners. We want the Democrats, the Republicans, the gays, the straights, the libertarians, the communists, the socialists, the fascists, the anarchists. If they are for our firearms freedoms, they are our friends, and we want all of them. Talk to everybody. Thank you all for coming, and thank you for being here.
My name is Paul Vallone, and my hobby is delivering pain to politicians. I direct Grassroots North Carolina, an all-volunteer group of rabble-rousers that's been around since 1994. Now, the last 5 years in North Carolina have been a pretty heady time. We've had a large number of successes. I'll describe a few of them now. But I'm going to do it not to brag, but rather as a cautionary tale. In 2011, we passed Castle Doctrine and Stand Your Ground. We expanded concealed carry into state and municipal parks. We made Title II firearms, fully automatic weapons, unequivocally legal in the state of North Carolina. Shortly thereafter, thanks to the Second Amendment Foundation, we were party to a lawsuit, Baton versus Purdue, that struck down the sort of state of emergency gun ban that Sean was describing earlier. Unfortunately, the state chose not to appeal, and it never became precedent-setting law. However, we did go back the following year in the General Assembly and repealed the now unconstitutional state of emergency gun ban. Thank you. In 2013, we had an omnibus bill, House Bill 937, that expanded concealed carry into restaurants, assemblies of people for which admission is charged, expanded carry in state and municipal parks, parades and funerals, and best of all, a limited provision for carry on educational property to protect our children. Now, after that, we went and repealed the Jim Crow-era gun registration law that pertained only to one county in North Carolina, Durham County, which was originally designed to allow sheriffs to prevent minorities from getting firearms. Now we're about to go after Durham and make sure that they destroy the existing records, registration records that they have kept. But here's the thing. As they say, no good deed goes unpunished. We have become the focus for Michael Bloomberg on some of his state-level efforts and Gabby Giffords. I'm happy to say we received visits on the No More Names tour, and also Gabrielle flew in on her private jet and her limos to have a dialogue with gun owners to which gun owners were not invited. We had fun with that one because they wouldn't disclose the location of the event. So we, you know how, what is it, Where's Wally or whatever it is? We played a game called Where's Gabby? Yeah, Where's Waldo? We played Where's Gabby? And eventually, like we did with the No More Names tour, we showed up with more counter-protesters than they had protesters. But perhaps more significantly, Bloomberg has moved in with his AstroTurf organization calling itself Moms Demand Action, which, by the way, has no tax charter, no charitable solicitation license. It was actually breaking numerous laws in North Carolina by soliciting funds under a phony name. But they have half a dozen paid staffers who are in Raleigh right now doing their best to undermine our rights in North Carolina. And that's the half a dozen staffers that show up to demonstrate against the Staples to try and bully them into prohibiting firearms in their stores or Targets or a Target or a variety of other ones. I'm sure you're familiar with all the stuff MDA's been doing. And moreover, I forgot who it was that that mentioned it. Yes, they took over our moribund gun control organization in North Carolina, North Carolinians Against Gun Violence, and now they are starting to put out increasingly strident propaganda there as well. So we have a considerable threat on the horizon. But that's not our only problem in North Carolina, and it's not the only problem that you will face. To quote the comic strip Pogo, we have met the enemy, and he is us. The problem is that we have had successes in North Carolina. We began in 2010 and 2012. We gained supermajorities in both chambers of the legislature. We got the governor's mansion, lieutenant governor's mansion, and control of the North Carolina Supreme Court. Well, and then in the same time, all of us worked together to kill Senate Bill 649. Federal gun control went down in flames. Well, guess what happens now? Everybody goes back to their work, home, hunting trip, whatever. I gave a bunch of money last year. I would put in all sorts of time and effort. Threats off right now, so I'm just going home. And consequently, what we're seeing, and I suspect probably some others are seeing in 2014, is that you got so much support in 2013 that unless you have an immediate threat on the horizon in your state, it is now beginning to drop off. And so I encourage you to go out and tell people exactly the message that you were hearing earlier. This election is crucial. Now, we may have had success, okay, at a federal level, and, you know, many of us have had success at a state level, but if we do not prevail in this election, you'll be back to 1994 again. Who remembers 1994? Yeah, okay, you got some seasoned, grizzled activists here. You don't want to go there again. So, as people have been saying, you need to be effective in the next election. The question is, what exactly does that mean? For starters, shameless self-promotion, Kay Hagan, one of those six Senate districts that's real important, that's in North Carolina, and the GRNC Political Victory Fund is taking contributions. Just a thought. But beyond that, we've got a number of projects we use, and I'd be happy to talk to people about them later. This is called Remember in November, A Gun Owner's Guide to Voting. This covers all candidates for state and federal office across North Carolina, and it tracks their voting record if they have one on gun issues, survey scores, bill sponsorship, and another measure we call bill support. And what it does is it plugs those into a database which estimates how often a given candidate can be expected to agree with you. A candidate who agrees at least 90% of the time gets 4 stars, 80% 3 stars, on down the list. The kicker is that unlike certain other candidate evaluation systems that are around, this one is objective. We don't make deals for ratings. Okay? Candidate gets what they earn, no more, no less. Nice part about it is, because this is not candidate endorsement, we do this using C4 money. And you guys that run gun rights organizations, you're a C4, right? We hope so. The other thing we do is we have formed a federal political action committee, the GRNC Political Victory Fund. We mailed out roughly 20,000 of this scorecard prior to the primary elections. We have done list building so that we now have a list of approximately 220,000 gun-owning voters. You need to build lists in your state. We had it easy because the concealed handgun permit records were a matter of public record, so we data matched them against the State Board of Elections records and came up with these 220,000 matches. But you can build lists other ways. So start a PAC if you don't have a PAC. Incorporate as a C4 if you haven't already done so. When you got that PAC, start doing independent expenditures for or against candidates. Beat the daylights out of the anti-gun candidates. I have several that are on my hit list right now. I will be going after them real soon. And you do that by doing mailings, by doing robocalls, which are cheap, by the way, by doing a lot of email, and wherever possible, radio spots as well. So I'm around if you guys want to talk about nuts and bolts and making sure that you are successful in the next election. Thank you.
I'd like to thank you all, and I hope that most of you can be, I know that Scott can't, but that some of you can be available tonight at the reception so people can get a better